You're listening to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast,
featuring the leadership of Ron Kitchens.
The topics discussed today are designed
to keep you moving always forward.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast with Ron Kitchens. I'm Amanda Harrison, and I get the honor of being your host for today. In past podcasts, we've shared extensively about our hiring practices, but we had some questions from our listeners recently about how we onboard our new hires and immerse them into our culture to ensure their success once they're selected. Before we discuss the tactical strategies we use to accomplish our onboarding, Ron, can you open up today's conversation by sharing why it's so important that everyone on our team learns and buys into our culture, and maybe even more so than learning how to do their job correctly?
Yeah, thanks, Amanda. And thanks to, and at this point, I don't remember who sent in the question, but it's really important that people send those in. We love the feedback. We love the interest in people telling us about where their struggles are, where their pain is. I'll bet you we're either going through it with you right now, or we've already crossed through that chasm, and we'd love to share what our solution was, and maybe it helps you find and innovate from there a solution. So thank you for the feedback. We really appreciate that. But culture is incredibly important. I think Peter Drucker said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. If you don't have the right people going in the right direction, as Jim Collins would say, you get the right people and you put them on the bus, they'll tell the bus where to go. And that's what culture's about. Making sure that bus is full of gas and it's clean and it's got all the right tools on it. And then they can execute the strategies that are developed. But without the right people and the right culture, you know, a job's a job. And we've all been to those companies where people are just putting in their time to get their paycheck on Friday. And none of us want to be part of that. And that's a big reason we've gone down this journey. I'll tell you, it's selfish. I just don't want to work in an organization with a bunch of people who aren't highly committed to our culture, our goals, our values, and doing it all together. And when you get to go to work every day and work with your best friends, that changes the outcome, it changes the passion, and it changes what people are willing to do in terms of pulling together. So culture is key.
Absolutely. And so that's something we look for when we are going through that hiring practice, but it's even more important when we're going through the onboarding practice. So I want to start with talking about our primary strategy, and that's this. In the first 2 to 3 weeks of working at Southwest Michigan First, new team members are assigned the task of sitting down with every single person on the team for a 30-minute one-on-one. So, Ron, talk about that process and take us through what it kind of looks like.
So, first thing is people are going to hear that and go, oh, my, do you know how much time that's going to take? Yeah, it takes a lot of time. And when you put a pen to paper, you realize it's really expensive. But if you think education's expensive, figure out what the cost of ignorance is. This is critically important for us because as that person came through our organization, people in the team learned a lot about them. As you know, we've talked before, part of our hiring practice is that when you join our team, you're interviewing with every single person on the team. So everybody on the team knows about you. They know what your strengths are. They know where your talents are. They know where your passions or your commitments are. But you as a new staff member, you don't know much about this group. Mm-hmm. So we need you to go deep with us. So we need you to understand who has kids and what's important. We need to understand if somebody leaves on Thursday at 3 every day, not to think somehow you're being cheated, but understand that they're going to take their parent who's at home in for a doctor's visit. You got to understand who's passionate around different charities. Understand really what everybody's jobs are, not what their titles are. Mm-hmm. And so ignorance is our enemy at this point, and we want to make sure that we do everything we can to make ignorance evaporate.
Yeah, and so like we mentioned, we have about 26 people on our team. That continues to grow. So if you think about sitting down with everyone for 30 minutes, it is a huge time commitment. Some of the things that we definitely talk about, and Ron, if you want to mention these, is we sit at the reception desk. Everybody meets with the communications team. Why are some of those specific areas of importance?
So I had a board chair, gosh, 25 years ago now, of an organization that I was running who told me that he was president of a bank, and he said that he had started as a teller. And so I said, oh, you mean in college, kind of worked your way up? He said, no, I had a master's degree. And when I came to this bank, I started as a teller because there's no better way to learn what's important to us than learn what's important to our customers. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me, that it doesn't matter who you are, what your title is, what your experience is. When you're new in an organization, you need to be plugged in at the safest point possible so that you can absorb the culture, you can absorb and observe what others do and how they make decisions, so that when you begin to make decisions, you know what the priorities are because you've lived them, you've seen them, you've watched, you've observed, not because you read them in a book somewhere, not because they're theoretical. So it's incredibly important for us that no matter what level you're plugged into, you spend time for us at the front desk because you get to learn and observe there. So that's very important. You're also going to spend some time with our communications team. And that isn't just about, oh, how do we write a letter, or we only ever use blue ink when we use ink pens, or we never use anything in our office that has other people's logos on it. But it's also in a today in a world where digital communication is instantaneous, where people are online 24/7, we want people to know that they are empowered to participate in the communication strategy, but that we put guardrails in there. You know, we want you on Facebook, we want you on Twitter, we want you on Periscope, but you need to know when you're there, you're representing us as well as yourself. And so we have certain standards, certain things that we do, certain things that we don't ever do. And to understand that, to live that, but also to know to respond instantaneous. So, you know, we had an example where we had been recognized by Outside Magazine as one of the 100 best places in America to work. I don't know, I think we're 28 on the list. And I read about it first on social media from one of our staff people who had seen it, grabbed it, and pushed it out. They didn't wait for permission to do that. They happened to be a subscriber to Outside Magazine. And so they saw it, got it out there. And then I could follow up and say, whoa, what's this? Who else is on the list? Isn't this great? A typical organization would have a meeting. You got to write a press release. You got to think through, who do we notify? Not in today's world. You got to get it out there, but you have to know what those standards look like, how they feel, and know that you're empowered to do that.
So in a sense, everybody is responsible for onboarding our new team members. Like you mentioned, our person at the front desk, our communications team, every single person's meeting with this new team member, and they have a sense of responsibility for making sure that they get onboarded appropriately, that they understand our culture. Why are you a fan of having it be a collective effort? So we've talked in the past, we don't necessarily have an HR team, an HR person. We do this whole strategy holistically as a team. So talk about that.
Yeah, we're a tribe as a team. And, you know, even if somebody comes to us who's got experience in their job, they've worked at other organizations, they're great, competent professionals, they've never done it with us. And they're going to be different nuances. You know, and I love the saying, you can't describe the ocean if you've never seen it. So everybody on our team's role is to get a new team member to the ocean as quickly as possible. So once they've seen it, once they've tasted the salt water, once they've played in the waves, they then know how to describe it. And they know how to be part of that. And they know how to utilize it in their work. And everybody on the team comes at it from a slightly different direction. So by having team-based onboarding, it allows the process to go faster. It allows it to have much more depth to it, and it allows it to be integrated with our entire organization as opposed to simply being a functionary role that just is about, I got to check boxes and make sure this person knows how to use their email account.
Awesome. So that's kind of how the whole team participates in the process. But there's also a one-on-one mentoring process that's part of this too, right?
Right. So when we're going to hire somebody, when we discover we have a need, we ask one member of the team to lead that process. Now, it's generally not the person who will eventually be the supervisor, or we call it accountability partner, for that staff member. It's somebody who has time and expertise around what that role is going to be. And so that person stays with the new staff member from the hiring process all the way through their onboarding. We'll refer to that position as Sacagawea. You're the person that's got to carry the baby on your back and get everybody else and the baby safe to the Pacific Ocean. And so they're there to be a mentor, to make sure, are you having the meetings you need, or are you having trouble getting somebody scheduled? They're the person who you can go to and say, this person used these terms, they talked about this, I don't understand. So it's the person you have the privilege to be completely ignorant with. And they're there to help you. Their role is to get you accelerated as fast as possible, not to judge you, not to do anything but coach and love you and get you through the process. And that's critically important, because it can be very lonely. And you see lots of companies will lose people. You know, I hear leaders tell me all the time, well, we hired somebody and they lasted a week and they didn't come back. Well, one, you either hired the wrong person, or two, you treated them awful when they got there because they really wanted the job, or they wouldn't have gone through everything to get it. So you got to fix one of those two processes. And so we're trying very hard to be conscious of that.
Well, that's cool too, because those relationships continue throughout, even once you get onboarded and you form really deep relationships and friendships with those mentors or with those team members that, now I'm going into my third year, have continued on to this point. And you still feel like that's my safe person, right? Like if I still don't understand something or I still have a question, you can go to that person and say, what's the scoop? What do you?
Absolutely. And that's the reason that we don't have that direct supervisor, accountability partner, as we call it, in being that person, because we want you to develop that relationship and you to become that team, if you will. You know, my daughter's in a sorority at SMU, at Southern Methodist University. You know, one of the things that I love about it is there's seven generations of big sisters, all of which who serve as mentors to her, all these successful, amazing women who are calling saying, you're part of my family and my lineage, and I want to be here to serve you. We're seeing the exact same thing step up with our team members. And people are building these teams within the team, which is an amazing thing because it helps us be stronger as a group.
Yeah, that's a good example. I hadn't thought of that with Kelsey, but that's a great visual for what we're talking about today. All right, I want to transition a little bit and talk about our playbook. So we've talked about that at length before. I specifically want to discuss the role it plays in our onboarding process. So, Ron, how does the playbook help aid our onboarding?
So, our playbook is a hybrid version of standard operating procedures. We've gone through and tried to identify every decision that has to be made in the organization and identified how we make it and what the recommended outcome is or what the crisis role is. So, if you're Saturday, you got to get a proposal out, you know, you're a little bit crisis mode and the copier doesn't work, who do you call for after hours? Or where do we keep the toner cartridges? Or, you know, whatever the issue is, you get sick and you have a proposal due, what do? You're on the road and you get sick and hospitalized. What do you do? And it's happened twice on our organization where people had major illnesses ended up in the hospital, and our clients never knew that it had happened. So we're addressing all of those, but it's also about empowering you. We want you to know everything that we can think of for you to know and have immediate access to it, because we trust you. We trust you to make the decisions based on this information, but we also trust you to, if something's not in the book and you discover it, to put it into the book. So everybody has the ability to add to the playbook and how they make those decisions. We also have all of our employees have corporate credit cards with pretty high limits, because we've gone through and said, at this person's level, what are the issues that they may have to deal with? And we want to eliminate the financial piece of that, not being able to react. So it all goes with our culture of trust, our culture of empowering, our culture of removing ignorance. We want you to have the information you need and know that you have the resources to solve it. You know, it just feels better when you work with a place that believes in you and believes in your ability to make decisions.
Yeah, one of the things I definitely want to point out about the playbook too that was really helpful when I first started is that it contains a really practical section that's filled with all the definitions and descriptions of the industry, acronyms and lingo, things like IEDC and RFI. And if you're new to economic development, and I'm sure this is applicable to lots of leaders out there, you can really find yourself dazed and confused, not sure what people are talking about. So we've got some practical stuff in there like that.
Yeah, you know, every industry's got acronyms, jargon, you know, using words that don't make any sense to outsiders. I don't know how that makes them better. I've told you this story before that, you know, I formerly lived on the Gulf of Mexico. And so Lynn and I began to learn sailing. And it drove me crazy because sailors use terms that no other industry, no other hobby, no other anything uses, and it drives people away. And if they simply would relax a little bit, let it be fun, instead of, you know, we took a test to be certified and so we could rent sailboats, and it was really about learning vocabulary. It didn't make me any better. It didn't make me a better sailor. It made me memorize things. We're going to remove that. It doesn't serve anybody. Every industry has that. It's foolish. It really is about trying to be exclusive and a little arrogant. It doesn't help people be better. It makes them feel dumb. And why would anybody want to be in and around an organization that makes you feel dumb? And so we've got that vocabulary in there. But as people who know me know, well, if you use an acronym, I'm going to bust you pretty fast.
Yeah,
it take you an eighth of a second to use the real words. So use your big boy words. Use your big girl words. Tell us what you mean, not some acronym because it's lazy or cliche.
Yeah, and that's something that when we have our scrums every morning, if somebody on the team uses a acronym or some sort of, you know, industry jargon, you know, Ron, you'll stop us right there and say, wait, what does that mean? Even though you, of course, know, but you're teaching the point that we don't need to create these barriers, especially for new people who are just getting in and trying to figure out what's going on. So,
and if we do it for our team, we'll do it to our customers.
Right.
And why in the world would any organization want to make their customers feel dumb?
Right. Totally. The other thing I wanted to quick mention about the playbook is that it also contains a reading list of all the books we've read together for book club over the past few years.
Yeah, it really is a library. So I too often quote Good to Great, but when we get new people, particularly young leaders on our team, they haven't read Good to Great. And so we need them to know, hey, if you want to catch up, if you want to go at the speed of the organization, here's the knowledge we all have. Here's the knowledge that we're building from, and we'll pay for those books, whether it's an audio book, whether it's a digital version, whether it's a print version. But we need you to catch up so that you've got the same knowledge, so we're making decisions based on the same enlightened knowledge base. And that's why we keep that running list. And we ask people actually mostly to look at it before they come to work so they clearly understand this is not just a job. You've got to come at this with a learner's mind and be committed, in a lot of cases, to graduate school level learning if you want to be on par with other members of the team.
Yeah, so with all these things being said about our one-on-ones, about our playbook, we haven't really talked a lot about how we specifically coach people on how to do the job that they were hired to do, but that's intentional. So Ron, will you explain why we focus way more on the engagement, the team, the culture side, and we focus very little on the specific task or job training at the beginning?
We said it before on these podcasts that we expect our team members to be the CEO of their own responsibilities. So as a CEO, I mostly get to design my own job. I get to decide which things I'm going to use my time, talent, and treasure for on a daily basis. Now, I have a board of directors that I'm accountable to, and so annually we'll sit down and talk about priorities, but I get to design what my job looks like. Well, if we're going to be true to our belief that everybody's a CEO, then you're going to design your job. Now you have to come to me and we have to talk about it and we have to make sure we're aligning resources and it makes sense for us. But to do that, to allow people to grow as professionals, to grow as leaders, to focus on their talents and strengths, we have to have growth as an organization. So over the last decade, we've seen 23% annual growth, top line growth. So that's allowed us to grow our team dramatically. And as each new person we hire is a result of people saying, I want to play more in my strengths and hear the things that don't give me strength. We amalgamate those things together. And then we look to hire somebody on our team who's going to be good at those things that have been amalgamated together. Sometimes we can't amalgamate everything, but we can get most of it in there. And then that person will come into the role, the organization grows and expands, and then they'll begin to slough things off that don't play into their talents and strengths, and we can move somebody else into that role. So a key to it is you've got to have constant growth. You've got to continually be pushing up. Otherwise, it's stagnation, and nobody gets to change roles or expand or grow if you're stagnant. But it's also critical that everybody then owns it. They've essentially written their own job descriptions. So I don't set goals for them and say, here's what you got to do next year. They present goals. They present resource needs. They present their CEO plan for their responsibilities. To me, we make sure that it aligns with the organization's measured goals and that we have the resources for them to go forward. And so for us, I can't be authentic and say, well, everybody's a CEO if I don't also grant people the ability and the freedom to build out their plan of work, as long as you have that check and balance with making sure it hits the ultimate goals that are established by our board of directors.
Awesome. Excellent feedback and insight. Before we near the end, I want to talk about the concept of as an organization grows, you know, the more people you onboard, the bigger your team gets, the culture is potentially going to grow and maybe shift with that growth. So is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? As a leader, as the point leader, should you be fighting to maintain an existing culture at all costs? Or is this like anything else that needs to change and adapt with time?
So your core values never change. We believe the greatest force for change is a job. Everything we do has to be focused around serving that belief. How we get there is dramatically different. You know, when I started in my first point leadership job, I had an IBM Selectric typewriter sitting on my desk. I can remember it was like this butterscotchy color. I don't know, must have been 50 years old, probably not, but it was old then. And it was a few years before I got my first computer. But now, you know, I have a computer at home. I have a laptop in my desk that I carry. I have two iPads. I have multiple smartphones. All of this is giving me the ability to have technology and communications, but I don't have a desk phone. So that IBM typewriter is gone. My desk phone is gone. But my belief that the greatest force for change is a job didn't change in that 30 years. And so the how you get there, what you do to get there, changes and adapts with the times, with the resources, with the capacity, but your why can't change. And organizations that fail begin to serve multiple whys and they lose track of their core, of their soul. And boy, when we see that happen, it's pretty tough. You know, the end is near for that organization.
Yeah. So as we close out today's conversation on onboarding, do you have any final thoughts to share with our listeners on this topic?
Hire great people. Hire great people. Hire great people. Too many times as leaders, we feel the pain of crisis. Somebody's leaving us. Somebody's, you know, changing careers. And one of the things we do, if somebody leaves our team, we have an agreement. We're not going to hire anyone for 8 weeks. And people know that going up front. The team has to absorb that role for 8 weeks. It isn't because I'm trying to save money. It isn't anything. It's that I want us to know that we are never going to crisis hire. We're never going to go, oh, we lost somebody. We got to get in a hurry. It's got to be an emergency. Every time I have ever done that, it's been a mistake. Every single time. So we have a structure. We honor the structure. The reality is we never hire anybody in 8 weeks because we can't get through our own process that fast. But everyone on our team knows we have to absorb somebody leaving and we have somebody transitioning who's off of our team and going to do a little sabbatical in their life. And we know as a team, we're just going to absorb that. And then we'll figure out, what do we really need? Because there are things that that person does that others are going to absorb. They want to do that. It's been their dream, their strengths, their passion around that. And so it'll allow us to then sort out what we really need. So as leaders out there, I encourage you, hire amazing people, but hire them in a strategic way and then give them every single ounce of authority you can give them, every resource you can give them, and stand back and watch them be incredibly successful. The mark of a great leader is not what you get done in your calendar every day. The mark of the great leader is the impact you have on the lives of people who are then impacting those that you serve most.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.